What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. Hey everybody, welcome back and thank you for joining me again here on Hitting Your Stride. I have with me today Rod McDonald. With 30 years of experience in the field of wellness and self-improvement, Rod is a leading authority on personal and professional change. To his credit, Rod is a coach, an international speaker, and an author. He co-wrote Adversity to Adaptability, Turn Life's Greatest Challenges into Your Greatest Opportunities, as well as the best-selling book, Foundations of Professional Personal Training. Finally, Rod is a semi-retired multi-sport athlete, four-time Ironman competitor, cross-Canada cyclist, former competitive rower, 200-hour registered yoga teacher, and most importantly, he is a proud husband and father of three. I am happy to welcome Rod to this Hitting Your Stride episode to offer another perspective as to why I created Equestrian Elements Life Coaching. Welcome,
Rod. Hi, Tracy.
Rod.
It's great to be here.
Yes. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule. I know just how busy you are.
Of course. It's my pleasure to be here.
So having you here on this episode with me is another example of how some of my guests are from outside the arena of horses, and yet their input, advice, and experience is invaluable. I have asked you to join me today to help offer a different perspective on how effective life coaching can be and to draw on your elite level of athletic pursuit. Now, in full transparency, I will say that you are my coach and you are the CEO of Certified Coaches Federation, which is the institute in which I have been absolutely and thoroughly enjoying going through my life coaching certification levels. And yeah, so this is awesome, me having my mentor and coach here with me. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Tracy. And, you know, it's likewise an honor for me because when I work with a client, I don't like to think of them necessarily as a client as much as somebody that I get to work with rather than that works with me, so to speak, because I really believe in the notion that we can work together in helping you achieve what you're wanting to achieve with Equestrian Elements and Hitting Your Stride. And everything else, because I really believe that the world needs more coaches. And I'm really happy to be here to support you and to support this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So let's start it off with this whole Ironman thing, because as much as you have shared it with myself and my colleagues in our learnings, I really don't know exactly, you know, what it is that you went through for this. So what was the lure to enter into your first Ironman, let alone a total of four? And how did you change from the start of your first race to the finish of your last?
Well, you know, it's probably worth saying that the Ironman triathlon is regarded by most people as the world's hardest 24-hour endurance event, or endurance event that takes place under 24 hours. And it was something that, you know, I was aware of growing up and into my young adulthood and so on, that I was aware that it took place, but it was never, ever something that I dreamt of doing, had a goal of doing. I could never even have imagined myself doing it. And there's a big reason for that, and that is that twice in my life, once when I was about 12 years old and again when I was in my early 20s, I had two really serious near-drowning incidences. And when you go through something like that, you actually can have what I had, which was sort of a near phobia of open water. I was fine in a swimming pool, I was fine at a lake if I could see the bottom, but when you get out into a lake or a river or an ocean where you can't see the bottom, it became really sort of, I'd get this like tightening sensation and this fear. And if I was ever in anything from a canoe to a ferry or something like that, I'd just be like gripping the rails, just trying to hold on because of the fear of going into the water and almost drowning again. And you'd think that I would have gotten the message from whatever higher power of like, stay away from water because of these two incidences. But what ended up happening was in about 2000, I guess it was 2005, 2004 into 2005, I was expecting my son. And I realized, when you know that you're going to have a baby, you start to think about what that's going to be like and the things you're going to do. And I had this thought of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to end up passing on this fear of open water to my son. And I didn't want to do that. And so I thought, well, how can I get over this fear? And the way that my brain works is, I kind of have to force myself or put myself into a situation where I would have to get over that fear. And so I thought, okay, well, I can learn how to swim better. That'd be one thing, because I couldn't swim very well. And so I thought, okay, well, what if I did a competition? And I was already doing some running and cycling, and so I thought, well, why don't I do a triathlon? That way I can just do the swimming part, I can learn the swimming part. And so I actually hired a coach to work with me on the swimming part, both just sort of the basic sort of stroke of swimming, plus some open water stuff. And from the time that I did that, I sort of said, well, if I'm going to do a triathlon, why not like really make the goal big? And I got the idea of doing an Ironman triathlon, which in hindsight was a completely crazy thing to do when I had never done a triathlon before.
Wow.
But as they say, if you're going to set a goal, set a big goal.
Yep.
So that's how that was sort of born, was this notion of I don't want to pass on that fear to my son, and so create a big enough goal that I would have to muster as many resources as possible to make sure that goal was accomplished. And that's what led towards my first Ironman triathlon.
And how did you change from the start of your first to the finish of your last, like, because that there's multi levels of personal growth, I would assume.
Yeah, they're, I never had the aspirations of, winning a triathlon or winning the Ironman triathlon, or even winning my own sort of age division or whatever. I just was setting out with this goal of overcoming this fear of open water. And so for me, it wasn't as much a physical goal as much as a psychological goal. And I
Okay.
think that's relevant to anybody in any realm of life, is that there are some things that might be tangible, like education or finances and things like that. But then there's the intangible, which is actually typically more powerful, things like fear and self-doubt and things like that, that will often hold us back more. So there was a lot of work that I had to do to get ready for that first Ironman triathlon. And I basically set a plan. I devoured everything I could to learn as much as I could about what I'd have to know. And I went from only being able to swim a couple of lengths of a pool to within, I guess it was 36 weeks or so, that I went from a triathlon to a sprint triathlon to a long course triathlon. And then in the fall, in September, I did the first Ironman. And between that one and the first, I sort of felt like, okay, I did it. But was it a fluke? Which you don't really have a fluke when you're out there for, up to 16, 17 hours.
Wow.
And so I wanted to do a second one to sort of test myself if I could do it again. And I did do it again. And the third one was, I wanted to actually involve my family. So I did the third one in Lake Placid, and we rented like a little cabin and brought some family and friends down, and a few other people that I'd been training with. We rented the same space, and so that was sort of a fun thing, if you can consider that many hours of exercise fun. And then the fourth one was actually, it was that the fourth one was a tough one because I have a number of injuries that I developed over the years of doing that stuff and some other things. And so the fourth one was sort of almost like my swan song. I sort of thought, well, let me just get one more done. Because I did have an initial goal of doing five, but
Wow.
like after I did the first one. And so I did the fourth one in Arizona. And that was a really tough one because I wasn't, because of my injuries, I wasn't in as good physical condition as I might have been. And so it's interesting that the first one was really a psychological challenge. The middle two were for different reasons. And then the last one ended up being a psychological challenge because of the physical challenges that I
Wow.
was dealing with. So
Wow.
it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Now, did you have any issues like that first time? Like, 'cause swimming is the first phase, right? So there you go. You are definitely jumping into your fear. How, like, were there any scary moments for you? And how did you
Every moment
in
was
yeah.
scary.
How did you work through that in the moment?
So just I guess for your podcast listeners, just to get a sense of the distance in case they're not familiar with it, the swim portion is 3.8 kilometers, which is 2.4 miles. The bike part of it is 180 kilometers or 112 miles, and the run at the end of it is 42.2 kilometers or 26.2 miles. So a full marathon at the end of everything. And so coming back to your question about the swim, I was, in spite of all the work that I had done, I was still, I had this sort of managed terror that I was going through. And I remember it like it was yesterday that on that first race, you have to get up at like 4 in the morning to get, into the race area and prepped and everything. And then you get into the water, and I was terrified, like because in that particular race in Wisconsin, it's an open water start, which means you actually have to go out into the water and tread water for about 20 or 30 minutes, so they can get all the athletes in the water until they hit the cannon to start the race, and that 20 or 30 minutes in that really cold water with about 2,500 other athletes treading water around you was terrifying. And I saw people throw up into the water, and I saw people crying, and I saw people angry and just doing all kinds of different things coping with their own experience of it.
Wow.
And it was really interesting because I had to sort of check myself, and what I found, which actually helps me work with my clients, is I found myself going into this kind of negative spiral of like, what am I doing here? I'm not ready. I'm not prepared. I'm gonna drown. I'm gonna leave my family, because of doing this stupid goal. And then I hit what I call a pause button, where it was kind of like this negative spiral, and I hit this pause button to just stop and actually remember what was actually true, because those things aren't really true. They were, I guess, possibilities. But I had to pause and think, okay, what's really true? I've done the work, because it was, 36 weeks up to that point. I'd done the work, I had done the distance, I had done the training, the psychological training, the physical training, the nutrition. Everything was dialed in so that I could do this race. And I just had to remind myself that. So instead of that negative spiral, I started doing a positive spiral to convince myself the truth, which was I was ready to do this race. Now, there were all kinds of things that happened in that race that we probably don't have time to get into that shook that confidence, that newfound confidence, along the way. Not the least of which was that, which I actually only found this out after the fact, that that race had the highest number of dropouts in the swim portion out of any Ironman race up to that point, because it was brutally cold and people were getting to be hypothermic. And it's a two-loop swim in that race, which means that you, by the time the slower athletes like me get towards their first loop, the fastest athletes are starting to lap the slower athletes. And so you not only have to contend with swimming your own race, but you end up with people swimming on top of you and kicking you and punching you by accident as they're trying to get through themselves. So
Well,
fun.
fun. And but yeah, I mean, what an ultimate way to test yourself and geez, you know, go big or go home, apparently. So I love it. So just to go back to something you said about preparedness, because this podcast is going to go up on what is actually going to be the first weekend of horse showing. And I can hear a bunch of horse people around me just, you know, yay, because finally life is starting to look a little normal. And yet along with it are the nerves. And but everything you said there about, you know, if I could say to everybody listening here, you've put in the hours. You know, you had that extra time during the winter to prepare and develop that foundation work, and you've developed, you know, more of a rapport with your horse because you've been spending more time together, like in that more simpler aspect. So everything you said about what you told yourself about how prepared you knew you were is what I would want all of my equestrian listeners and family members of equestrian, or you know, everybody there for the support team to help these riders understand that you might be nervous going into this first horse show and into this season after everything's been so crazy, but just to trust yourself, ultimately, that's what you had to tell yourself, right?
Yeah, you know, I love the way you put that because it's really it is about trusting yourself and trusting the effort that you've put in and realizing that when a person has nerves, whether you call it nerves or anxiety or stress or fear or whatever, you know, the person labels it as, that's a natural response of the nervous system in an effort to protect us from harm, right? In the same way that if you're, you know, walking through the forest in the middle of the night and your flashlight turns out, you're out camping or whatever, your flashlight stops working and you hear like a snap or something in the bushes around you, your brain automatically goes to, oh my gosh, what is that? Even if you've been a veteran camper forever, there's always this, what could that be, right? It might not be terror at that moment, but there's a heightened awareness, and that heightened awareness ramps up the energy and the neurotransmitters, for that matter, to get you scared, so that if you have a life-threatening situation, your body's actually ready to deal with it, the fight or flight scenario.
Okay.
So, and so we all have that, whether it's an equestrian getting ready for a show, a triathlete getting ready for a race, somebody getting ready to do a speech on stage, there is a, it's the same response, right? It's this stress response. And it's super helpful to remind ourselves that we, you know, if we're going to do this, if we're actually going to, you know, get into that race, get into that show, get onto that stage, that we are prepared. Now, if we're not prepared, then it's hard to do that, which is why preparation is so important, why working with a coach is so important to sort of help the person plan and strategize to get ready for that race or show or speech or whatever. So it's really in the way I look at it is it's an opportunity to take all of that energy, because that fear and stress and anxiety is just energy, and actually turn it into something better, which would be excitement or confidence or courage, because it's just they're just words for the same energy.
Yeah, it's just all how you look at it, what little pocket you choose to put it in. Okay, so what has stayed with you from those experiences? If you could, you know, say one or two things that has stuck with you or that you learned about Rod, what would that be?
I guess I guess the actually that first big race, the big triathlon, because it was for me so monumental, it was a confirmation that if I want to do something, if I want to do anything, I can if I plan it out and I get the support that I need and do the work, right? Because when you think about it, when you think about anybody who achieves anything, other than somebody who, you know, buys a lotto ticket and happens to win, We're not talking about sort of a freak occurrence like that. When we're talking about a goal that someone has that takes work and effort and time, the people who achieve those goals are the ones who put in the work, the effort, and the time, not the ones who show up at the last minute and try to wing it or whatever. Those are the ones who typically, won't succeed.
Right.
But if you, and I guess I'm talking to your listeners, if you have put in that time, put in that effort, then number one, you deserve to be at that race, at that show, whatever the case may be. And all you have to do at that point is to just do your thing. And one of the things that I realized that helped me in preparation for that race, for the triathlon, was when I was in training, you can't typically train that long a duration in preparation. You have to do what are called brick workouts, where you combine chunks of things. So you do a swim, and then you get out of the pool and go for a bike ride. You do a bike ride, and you get off and do a run. You can't typically, do a 16 or 17-hour race in training because it's just too much for your body. And so you have to do smaller chunks of time with maybe more intensity. But the truth is that if you've done the hard work, there's a saying in martial arts that if you cry in the dojo, you'll laugh on the battlefield, which just means that if you do the hard work in preparation, which for the equestrians would be, doing the riding, doing the prep, changing whatever things they need to change and practicing those things and, pushing yourself further and further. If you do that work, then the competition becomes almost easy. And so for me, when I was doing my training, I would have to really carefully plan out, like on a long run, like a 20-kilometer training run, where could I go to the washroom? Where could I get a snack? How would I refill my water bottle? And you have to figure all that out. Do you loop around back to home? Do you know where there's a gas station and things like that? But in the race, I knew that on the bike ride, every 10 miles, there was an aid station that would have food and a washroom and or like portalettes or whatever, and any issues that I needed for my bike or whatnot. And then on the run, every mile, there would be the same thing. And so the way I looked at it was the way I reframed it, and this is something that we do with coaching, as you know, is we help our clients reframe a stressful situation into a more positive situation. So I thought, wow, I've done all this training and now I get to do a catered race, right? And because I had no aspirations of like winning or anything like that, to me it was like I just have to show up and just do the very best I can given the preparation that I've done, and I get to have it catered for me, which means as I ride through the bike, and I mean there's no aid stations in the swim because it's you're in the water, but for the bike ride, I was handed, bottles of Gatorade. During the run, I was given, chicken soup or whatever it was. And even at the very end of the race, they give you actually cola that's being like flattened, like taking the with the bubbles out. And it just, it just made it easier because I just reframed how I thought about the race.
Interesting. Yeah, that's definitely helpful. And I know I have talked to clients about that as well, especially trying to, change their outlook with their confidence and as their experience in the ring. Yeah, exactly that. Cool. All right.
So, Tracy, I have a question for you. Let's just say I was an equestrian athlete, and I have done some horseback riding in my life, but I'm certainly not an equestrian athlete. But if I came to you, and I sort of felt like there's something in my life that I need help with, whether it's sort of the mindset of being an athlete or something personal in my life that might actually be affecting my ability to be an equestrian, like, what would you say to me?
Aha, so the interviewer is now being the interviewee. That's very tricky, Rod. So first of all, I would have, well, hopefully, soon to be sit down in person conversations. And it's just something where we can do three things. First of all, identify what is missing or what's not quite working for them. Secondly, outline ways in which we can, you know, set them up, set up a plan in which these different areas can be approached. And then thirdly, I would look to help them achieve what it is they want to achieve, whether it be, you know, better their relationship or find a new job or, you know, set big goals for themselves. So identify, outline, and achieve. And any of those things, like you touched on it a little bit, it's looking at, even though I'm an equestrian, sorry, a life coach for equestrians, everything that I'm dealing with is not necessarily equestrian related. It's just that I have, you know, a lifetime experience and professional experience in this niche area that I know equestrians. But clients come to me looking, like I said, you know, we could be looking at their relationships, ways to better their finances, their emotions, spirituality, professional aspect in their lives. So yeah, it would just be a way of just sort of peeling back the layers a little bit for them. And I know from personal experience with my own personal development and work with you that in some cases it's not easy, but the process itself, if the hard work is put into it and reality is acknowledged and the role that you play in your own life is acknowledged and accepted, that's when change can really occur. So yeah, that's how I think I would deal with that question.
That's awesome. You know, the thing that has always impressed me about you, Tracy, is that you have this like really down to earth energy about you. You're very reassuring and very positive about things, but you're realistic too, right? So you're really good at identifying what needs to be done and not just being sort of wooey about it, right? It's not sort of, well, I hope this will work or I hope this will happen. You know, we all can use hope, but it's not the thing that's going to get things done. As I've heard before, hope is not a strategy. So, you know, we have to set those big goals. We have to create a plan and then do the work. And if hope helps a little bit along the way, fantastic. But without a plan, hope's not going to do it on its own.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you so much for that. That means so much coming from you. Okay, so let's move forward a little bit into your cycling, because I feel like there's a little bit of a correlation between being in the saddle on horses and being in the saddle for a cross Canada cycling venture. So mentally, where does a cross Canada cycling trip begin? How did you even get into that?
So, you know, interesting, I was mentioning earlier that, you know, I'd never had a goal of doing a triathlon, but I did have a goal from a young age of wanting to ride my bike across Canada. And I never really thought that I would be able to. It just seemed like so gargantuan a goal. And as I got older into my 30s, it just seemed like, you know, I was very busy with my career and with a growing family that, that, you know, it just would never happen. And then the company that I was at the time was approached by an organization called Coast to Coast Against Cancer, which was a charity that did, you know, big cycling charitable, you know, events, typically on a smaller scale. And they came to us and said, hey, we want to do a big scale cross Canada event. And it was at the time, the title sponsor was Sears. So it was called the Sears National Kids Cancer Ride. And they approached us and they said, hey, we want to, you know, really make this a big event. We want to have a lot of riders. We want to have you, the organization that I was with, have you create the training program for the riders. And if possible, would like somebody from your organization to be one of the riders. And I was like, awesome. Okay, let's do this. And so it sort of, you know, it sort of appeared out almost out of nowhere. Wow. But really that opportunity, you know, when you think about it, it wasn't just out of nowhere. It was the result of many, many years of my own education and experience and speaking and writing and all of that stuff that prepared me to be available for that opportunity. And the reason I put it that way is because for your listeners, you know, being ready for life isn't just showing up each morning. It's what you do every morning, every day on an ongoing basis that makes you ready for whatever the next opportunity, challenge, or disaster might be, for us to be able to handle that. So in that particular case, it was 2007, and I had already done two Ironman triathlons at that point, and this group approached us, and I became the lead author of the training program for what would be about, I guess it was about 36 riders that were going to ride across Canada to raise money for children's cancer charities. And so it was an absolutely worthwhile cause that would help us get through not only the really intense training that was required, but also a unbelievably intense actual ride. And so, you know, going back to how you sort of introduced it, I think there are some similarities between, you know, being in a bike saddle and being in a horse saddle. Obviously, the bike is not a living, breathing creature that has its own biological needs. It does have its own needs in terms of, you know, tuning up and making sure that the tires are inflated and the chain is clean and greased and all of that stuff. So there are things, sort of minor aspects of that. And we do actually, in many cases, we'll call our bikes our steed, you know, because it is our steed, you know, in that sense. And it's what gets us there. And in fact, the bicycle after the horse, the bicycle, when you think about sort of the evolution of transportation, the bicycle was actually the bridge between horses and cars. Mm-hmm. And there was a time when bicycles were, you know, the fastest thing on the road, you know, with the way they set up the new gearing and wheels and so on. So all that having been said, it was a great opportunity to be introduced to that. And so we led a group of 36 riders, most of whom hadn't done anything more than 10 or 20 kilometers of riding. Wow. From about November of 2007 until, I believe it was June 2008, when we started the ride in Vancouver, Canada. And over 19 days, we went from Vancouver to Halifax. So a total distance of over 7,000 kilometers.
In 19 days?
In 19 days. It was done in a leapfrog format. And so we had three teams of about 12 riders. So one team would be riding while the next two teams would sort of leapfrog forward using a transportation truck or RVs or whatever. So each individual rider and team rode about 4,500 kilometers in total of that 7,000 kilometer distance because of that leapfrogging format. It was the only way that we could continue to ride and do it in that short a time frame, because if it was done over the course of like a whole summer, it would be very difficult to get media attention, because it was sort of this ongoing thing. But by compressing it into 19 days, it was easier to get it into the news cycle, because it was always like we were in one city one day and then another city the next day and so on. So the news cycle sort of helped us raise money. Wow. So we raised over $2 million for children's cancer charities as a result of that ride.
Wow. Wow. Congratulations. what a great feat. And my God, you might not be doing the 7,200 kilometers, but yeah, 4,500, that's enough still.
Yeah.
So one of the areas that, I mean, I love coaching on, and I think it's just based on who I am and what I've experienced, is mindset. And there's lots of different mindsets that you can touch on. But again, the ability to adapt to your situation. And God only knows, horse people will know, because like you said, horses have a mind of their own. There's so much going on that anything can happen. And I think horse people understand that. And I don't want to say anything that's going to jinx anybody, because we're all sitting on all on our edge of our seats to get back to the show season. But yeah, horse people know that bad things can happen. Or let's say roadblocks or something can happen. So yeah. What happened when the plan for the day for you in this bike trip didn't go as planned or what you were expecting? So what did you do with bad weather or bad road conditions or a flat tire? Or what about when your body is like, all right, I'm done? Like, what did you do for any of those?
So it's a great question, and I could give you hours of stories from that one trip, or for any of the Ironman triathlons, because I've lots of those stories of hitting challenges of different types, from wildlife to just crazy times. So I guess there's a few things. So there are situations which are psychological for us. So our feelings of self-worth or doubt or self-esteem or competency or whatever the case may be. And that's just a matter of feeling like, okay, can I just do this? And that's kind of what we were talking about earlier about, you know, hitting that pause and then remembering that you've done all the training. And so, and we knew that in the roll up to this ride, that if people had done the training, that they would be ready. If they didn't do the training, they would quickly be found out that they weren't ready, because we would be riding the equivalent of about 12 hours a day, depending on the day. It was a little bit different. Some days were longer and some days were shorter, but about 12 hours a day, about 200 kilometers a day, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. And usually we would be riding in any 24-hour period, we would be riding at least, well, for sure once, but sometimes twice and even three times based on which leg of the ride we were on. And so there are the psychological things that we have to account for. There are the physical things, our own physical things that we need to account for, that has to do with not only our physical readiness, but also our ability in a ride like that to sustain what we maybe could do from the beginning of a day, let's say the beginning of a 12-hour ride. What are you doing to hydrate, to give yourself nutrition enough that you can continue? Because, you know, anybody can go for, say, a 20-minute ride or even up to an hour ride, but after that, your nutrition becomes really critical. And so we were really, really fortunate that the organizers had all of this planned out. They had sponsors for the hydration, the nutrition, the sports drinks, and so on. And so we had ample supply of those things. We had, at the end of each leg of the ride, there would be a crew that had been cooking up a real meal. So it wasn't just the, you know, boxed stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of beans and rice and veggies and stuff, so that we could eat and then go right to sleep if possible, to get ready for the next leg of the ride. So the psychological, the physical, the sort of technical, if you will, which would be like the bike has to be ready in the same way that the horse would have to be ready. And what do you call the stuff like the saddle and all that? Is that the tack?
The tack.
So much like the bike, you know, the saddle and everything has to be ready for the horse, and all that has to be set the right way. And so for the bike, the tire pressure has to be right. The tension on the gears has to be right. And with that many kilometers going through, it becomes even more challenging, because you wear through those components a lot more quickly. And there was one particular leg of the ride. We went from Merritt, I believe it was Merritt, BC, down to Kamloops. And I could be misremembering that, but it was Merritt, BC to Kamloops on what's called the Coquihalla Trail. And it was about a 30 or 40 kilometer distance. So not a long ride, but we started at about midnight. And so it was dark, completely dark out. And it's about a 20 kilometer climb up into the mountains. So you're going quite slow, but really, really grinding. And then about a 7 kilometer or so descent into Kamloops. And in that particular descent, like, it was pitch black out. All we had was, the little circle of light from our bike lights that was on the road. We were descending at about between 70 and 80 kilometers an hour, so really fast. And these are high-tech road bikes. So each wheel, you'd have about an inch of rubber on the road, front and back. It was really cold, and so we actually ended up having several riders having to drop out because if they didn't have the right gear, their hands would get numb from the cold, and they couldn't use the brakes or the gears properly. So they had to actually just stop riding and get taken up by our support vehicles. And it was one of the scariest and one of the most thrilling parts of the ride because, if we hit a pothole or a raccoon, ran out into the road or something, you can't be going that fast with basically, a cycling jersey and survive very easily anyway, that kind of a crash. And that was just one little segment of the ride. And so, there's the psychological preparation, the physical preparation, the technical preparation, the support. So we had a great support team that would encourage us and make sure we had what we needed. And I think all of those things apply really well over to equestrian. You have to have your own physical preparation done, your own psychological preparation done, the technical preparation, and of course, the horse needs to be prepared in that case. And have the support team around you, including a coach, which is, the kind of person that's going to help you get ready. And as you said, there's stuff that happens in real life, relationships and finances and stuff, that if that stuff creeps into your performance, it could be detrimental. Just like, I was missing my family, and so if I got out onto that ride, and even for a, 10 seconds, if I got distracted, that could mean me crashing. It could mean me swerving 6 inches to the left and hitting another rider. It could be going from the paved road onto a, gravel shoulder. And we had 18-wheelers passing us and, all kinds of other vehicles. And it could be the difference between life and death. And that's not that far off from equestrian, right? Because you're dealing with these, massive animals. Doing different types of events, show jumping and so on, that there's real risks. And so you have to be dialed in with all of those things for you to be ready, which is why having a coach or and a support team is so important.
You can't really get sidetracked when you're heading over one of those jumps or doing a dressage test, or especially eventing, or any of them. Like even the Western disciplines, for sure, it's all. And like you said, you're dealing with an animal with its own brain. It can decide in any moment that it's going to do something on its own. So you have to be in there with it for sure. So what
So,
was your reaction process to both short-term and long-term adversity? Because again, relating to the horses, when stuff happens and you're not expecting it, whether it be an accident or whether it be the horse comes up lame the morning of a big show, how did you frame that any adversity situations for yourself to get through them?
that's a great question because it is in part general in the sense that anybody doing anything can do some of this work. And then there are things that are specific to the activity or goal or event that you need to dial in as well. So generally speaking, thinking about what you're going to need to be successful, whether that's the physical, mental, emotional, technical, all that stuff, and kind of almost you can actually have a list and almost like a checklist, like, am I ready for this? Am I ready for that? And so on. But then that's sort of if everything goes well. But you also have to think, well, what could go wrong? And that can be a bit scary because that's kind of a shadow element of like, well, I don't want to think about something going wrong. But if you don't prepare for what could go wrong, then you're going to have to deal with it at the moment, right? And so spending some time thinking about what are all the possible things that could go wrong in your situation, in your, test or event or whatever it is or show that you're doing. And then thinking, well, what would be the right way for me to respond to that? So I've had flat tires and problems with gears and things like that in races. And so in some cases, like in my very first Ironman, I actually had four flat tires. which was very humbling because it was a very cold race, and having to do all that stuff. There is a van that goes around the course, but it wasn't where I needed it to be at the time, so I had to fix my flat tire myself. And you have to know how to do that. So like some people go into those races not knowing how to change a flat tire, and then they would be sitting by the side of the road, who knows for how long, 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half, hoping that the van will come by and do it for you. So being prepared for both the expected outcome and the unexpected outcome can be really, really helpful, so that if anything happens, it's like, as they say, expect the unexpected, that if you think it through, then you at least have a mental rehearsal of what to do with it. And so in equestrian, it could be anything from, what if there's an issue with the horse? What if there's an issue with the tack? What if there's an issue with the judges? What if there's an issue with the terrain or the weather or whatever it might be? And it's not that much different than what we, would do in a triathlon or a cycling event or whatever the case may be. But
Yeah, I mean,
thinking through all that.
yeah, so like what you were saying there, as far as, because I mean, having been a competitor myself, and know lots of them, if the confidence is even a bit of an issue, it immediately goes to the self-talk of everything will be fine. I will be okay. And it's true, you might be, but like you said, it's very scary when you have to stop and take a look at the okay, what if it isn't okay? How am I going to deal with it? Where am I going to go mentally? Am I going to check out, or am I going to dig deep and just keep going and do what I have to do to get myself back on track?
I remember, in addition to the triathlons and so on, I had done a number of what are called adventure races. So, kind of like an, pardon?
I've done those too.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like an off-road triathlon, right? You have some mountain biking, depending if it's winter or summer, mountain biking, usually canoeing, some bushwhacking or, orienteering type stuff. And a buddy of mine, and I had done a number of races together. And one of the things we did, and this was just going to the issue of fixing a flat tire, we would, after a ride, after we were training and we were kind of exhausted, we would have races. We would empty the inner tube for our tires, and we would have a race which one of us could replace the flat tire fastest. So pulling out the inner tube, replacing the inner tube, and getting it pumped up and back ready to ride. And you do it, and the funny thing is, you do it when you're tired, so that, like in a race, if you're tired, you can still do it and do it well. And so, like I said earlier, with the martial arts saying of, when you cry in the dojo, you can laugh in the battlefield. It's the same thing, I'm sure, with equestrian, that if you do the work and you push yourself past the point that you maybe need to, you have a capacity that will allow you that no matter what will happen, you can show up and be your best because you've done the required work ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and grit is a big aspect of anything with competition, whether you're dealing with horses or bicycles.
And I love that term because you've mentioned that before in our conversations, this sort of notion of grit. And like to me, there's almost like this teeth gnashing, like whatever I need to do, I'm gonna do it, right? But like what, why, what is grit for you, and like why is it so important?
You're right, I do get all gurry when I talk about grit. I don't know, for me it's I truly believe it's like this ability to rise to the occasion. Like no one is going to tell me that I can't do what I want to do to achieve something, or and I will do whatever it takes to show everybody that if they doubted me, I'm going to prove them wrong. And I believe grit's important. Like, I believe that some people are more inclined to be grittier than others, and maybe it's due to the way they were raised or experiences they've gone through and what they've learned and how they've come out the other side. I also believe that if you're not naturally gritty, that there's definitely that realm where you can learn, that you can deliberately practice and put in the discipline and the time and everything that goes with it, the planning, so that when stuff happens, you know how to respond. And I'm sure you've heard of this book, and I know, so Grit, the book by Angela Duckworth. I've read that, and I think I've bought 4 copies, and I've taken them to different people saying, you have got to read this book. I mean, she covers the concept of grit, sure, when talking about the Seattle Seahawks football team, but she also refers to grit when talking about spelling bee champions, these little kids from like the ages of 6 to 14, and how gritty they are when it comes to doing what they need to do to be successful. So I don't think grit is all about, you know, getting down and dirty and getting out there and like really, you know, being all crazed or whatever it takes, but it's that mindset that you are confident and you know that you can handle whatever comes your way. So as far as the horse people goes, I mean, I've said this before, you cannot not be gritty if you're getting on a 1200 pound animal that has a mind of its own. So kudos to all of my equestrian friends and clients and everybody out there, because they're doing what they love. And yeah, and they keep doing it. They fall off and they get right back up again because they love it.
Yeah. I love the way that you put that. And, you know, when you mentioned that, it seems like some people are sort of almost born grittier. But the truth is that we learn grittiness, right? And for the people who seem naturally gritty, they probably went through tough times when they were younger or young adults, or whatever the case may be, that allowed them to know how to be gritty, right? To have that sense of grit. And so we can learn that. And we just have to put ourselves through those situations that that require us to show up. And I mean, the easiest way, like you said, if you get knocked down, you get back up. If you get knocked down, you get back up. There's a Japanese proverb that I really like, which is fall down 7 times, get up 8 times.
Yeah. Right?
This notion, like, just you don't have to win every single time, but you have to get up every single time when you fall down.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we know that confidence is commonly visited, is a commonly visited issue when it comes to life coaching. And more often than not, the concern the client has is that they don't feel confident enough to handle the task ahead of them, even if they are, as we have talked about, prepared and have put in the time. So someone who has coached athletes, executives, and everyone in between, how have you helped them get through a time when their confidence might be low?
So it's a great question, because everybody has that. We might not get a chance to see that because oftentimes we see, you know, a clip on a TV show or a newsreel or something that's like the best of the best. But the truth is that everybody has self-doubts and fears and you know, all of that stuff. They just might not have been captured on film, or they might not have revealed it. And so one of the things that I recommend is for everyone to understand that there is this, as one of my clients calls it, a shared humanity. We all have these feelings, and to know that if we're experiencing it, we're experiencing our humanity. We're experiencing what everybody experiences. And so we're in good company. So it's okay to feel afraid or scared or unsure or whatever the case may be. And that alone for most people makes them feel like, oh, okay, I'm not feeling this way because I can't do it or shouldn't do it. It's because it's a natural part of the process. And the truth is, you could look at anyone, whether it's an athlete or a business person, if they have accomplished something, then you can look at it as something that they hadn't done before until they did it. And so when any of us are going to go after a goal that we haven't yet accomplished, it's the same thing. Nobody accomplishes anything until they actually accomplish it, right? But your early accomplishments can give you hints as to how to accomplish the next thing, even if it's something different. So what I sometimes will do is I'll ask my clients, tell me about other times that you have faced a challenge and you have succeeded. And it could be anything from a, you know, high school exam to, you know, a physical challenge, like running their first 5K run. It could be, you know, the loss of a loved one, or really any challenge that they have faced. And then I'll ask them, well, what did you do to get through that? And depending on which topic it is and which situation or challenge it is, there's going to be these almost a structure of success that, well, you know, I looked at the situation, I figured out what I had to do, I either learned it or whatever I had to do, and then I got through it. And you can kind of pull out a structure of success and say, okay, well, if we take that same structure and bring it over to this other goal that you have that you don't think you can achieve right in this moment, do you think if you applied that, it would make it easier? And oftentimes, every time pretty much, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, actually, if I did those same things. So, yeah. You know, for the person who was terrified for their, you know, final math exam in high school or something like that, you know, what do? They stayed up late, they studied, they got a tutor or a coach in that case, you know, they did whatever they had to do to prepare for it, and they succeeded with it. Well, could you stay up late or get up early in preparation for that equestrian show? Mm-hmm. What are the things that you would need to do to actually be fully prepared so that when it comes time to actually show up and do it, that it's actually doable,
yeah,
and not scary? And in most cases, that makes sense, because you're not only working with the intellectual side of what's the strategy, what's the process, what are the steps, but the combination of that plus the emotional side, and understanding that it's okay to be scared. It's okay to have a sense of, you know, whatever it is the person's going to label it as, anything from anxiety or terror or whatever it might be, and balance that out with that process to find a way through to get to the result that you want.
So what you said a little bit ago, talking about, again, what it is that they need to do. So if you do what it is that you need to do, which leads me into the next question, which I'm finding, again, as I'm evolving as a coach, as I'm really big in helping to promote and help people understand self-leadership. So, and I know we're getting close to our time here and you are a busy man and I don't want to keep you from your family this evening. But Rod, to you, what is self-leadership?
So self-leadership to me is being really honest with yourself about who you are and who you want to become. And if there's a gap between those two things, what you need to do to bridge that gap. What are the things you need to do? What are the beliefs you need to have? What are the thoughts you need to have? What's the knowledge or education you need to acquire? What's the help you might need? Because we're coaches, we talk about coaching. But what are the things that I need to get from where I am to where I want to be? And that could be in any area of our lives. It could be work or personal, family, relationships, financial, emotions, whatever the case may be. And so it's really about, first and foremost, self-awareness, to be able to have the insight, the real honest insight as to where am I right now, without judgment, right? It's more of a curiosity rather than judgment, to say, where am I right now? And am I happy with that? And where do I want to be? And how do I get from where I am to where I want to be? So that self-leadership is about self-awareness. And then the ability to take action on that and not just get caught in the thought process of, oh, I'd like to do this, or wouldn't it be great if I could do that?
Or I'll try it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a lot of being realistic and then putting a plan in place and just doing it.
Right.
Right. And it might seem for some people that the word just is diminishing. They might say, well, you know, you say just do it. Well, it's really hard for me to just do it. So then what I would do is figure out, well, what is doable, mm-hmm. that so that you could just do it. And so for some people, you know, when you take something like exercise, somebody might say, well, I would love to be, healthy and fit and whatever the case may be, and however they will define it. And if they're not doing something at the moment, I say, well, what could you do that would be easy for you to do? And so it might be, well, I guess I could go for a walk. Awesome. When are you going to go for a walk? And let's start with that. Let's not worry about you doing a marathon, a triathlon, or Ironman, or Cross Canada bike ride, or whatever. Like, if you want to get there, awesome. But you're not going to do that today or tomorrow. So let's figure out what you can do today and tomorrow on the road to getting you there.
Amazing. Exactly. And I've heard those wise words a number of times, and they have definitely helped me. They've helped ease that self-pressure that I put on myself a lot of the times, and yet at the same time, they've provided this really consistent approach to what I'm doing things or what I'm doing with things. So yes, great advice, coach.
Thank you.
So what's next on the horizon for Rod? You've already let it slip. You're not going to go for Ironman number five, but do you have any goals in mind?
I'm at a point in my life where I'm actually in sort of a redefining stage in that sense. I have three kids, a 16-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and I'm redefining what the next stage will be. I would love to do a fifth Ironman. I don't know that my body will allow me to because of the injuries that I've had. And it's not that I couldn't do the distance as much as the time, because you have to do that race in under 17 hours to actually officially complete it. But I've done a lot of the things that I would like to do. So, a lot of my goals going forward is about being a father, being a spouse, being somebody that contributes to others, which is why I do what I do in helping people become coaches, because I may not be able to do all of the things that I used to be able to do, but I can help other people. And by doing that, I can make a difference in the world. So that's a lot of my focus.
Well, you've certainly changed my world, and for that, I am eternally grateful. So, Rod,
Thank
I
you.
just want to thank you for taking the time to join me today on Hitting Your Stride. I found this very enlightening, and I hope my listeners can take the key points we've made here and find ways to apply them in their own lives. I think this has really highlighted how useful a life coach can be. So, thank you again for joining me.
Thank you, Tracy. It's been a real pleasure being here. And the one thing I would say to anybody listening to this is that if you really want something, if you really, really want something, that you can achieve it, no matter where you're at, no matter where you're starting. And working with a coach like Tracy would help you get there, because it's often about that extra little bit of support to figure out, to define exactly what it is that you want, and then to create a strategy and a plan to actually make it happen. So I hope everybody that's listening to this will actually take that to heart and do something about it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up, hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.